Hello， 大家好，欢迎来到这期 Fly with Lily 学英语环游世界的访谈节目。今天呢，我们要介绍的是一位我在巴厘岛认识的来自加拿大的女生朋友 Cat。 我们当时呢是在这个巴厘岛的 Outpost， 也是一个非常有名的这个共享工作空间 Co-working space 相识的。那印象最深刻的，我们是在这个下午茶的时间相遇。那时候这个共享工作空间呢，它非常贴心，有就是每周都有这个会员见面的活动。那那时候我就知道他请了一年的假期，还特别的飞到亚洲这边来体验生活，并且着手写他的书。那我听完他的计划之后，我就觉得非常有必要访问他，尤其呢是考虑到去年我一整年其实都在推广这个迷你退休的计划，就是呢不必等到退休我们才去追求我们自己热爱的事物。那 Cat 他和我一样，其实都是在大学就读新闻专业，但是呢他就跟我说他毕业了之后呢其实找不到理想的工作。他呢目前呢在一家保险公司的传播部门工作上班，他觉得这个工作还是挺不错的，他就跟这个公司请假一年，因为呢他想要体验国外生活还有亚洲的文化，同时呢他想要专注于写作。起初呢他是计划在这个意大利待上6个月，用这个 au pair 就是换宿保姆的形式获取住宿，然后呢他展开的就是这个到东南亚的独自旅行，包括这个资金还有住宿的计划。他的旅行预算总共是16000加币，大概是37万台币，或者是换算成人民币是85000块。他表示呢这笔预算是打算把每一分都花在旅行上面，而且呢他本人还有一些储蓄，但是呢这个16000加币仅仅是他对这次旅行的预算而已。在旅行中呢他一边完成自己的小说，而且呢我前天在跟他联系的时候，他说他已经找到了代理出版商，这真是令人兴奋的消息。因为呢他在旅途中还写这本书，就让这一本书就感觉特别有意义，对吧？那在节目中呢，我也问了 Cat 一系列深入的问题，譬如像是他启程前面临的这个挑战，还有这些挑战对他决定产生了什么影响。我们还探讨了他是如何意识到需要到亚洲来探险并且写这部小说，以及是什么样子的原因呢激励他开始这次冒险。他还分享了他旅行中最重要的学习和一些意外的体悟，以及呢旅途中遇到了什么挑战促使他成长，是否有特别难忘的经历。那我们还讨论了他如何在这个旅途中平衡寻找灵感并且专注于写作，以及呢他是否有这个创意写作的技巧和建议哦。他还分享了这个在旅途中带给他特别喜悦的时刻，以及哪些地方或体验给他留下深刻的印象。我们还谈到了如何在环境和文化变化中找到内心的平静和稳定，以及呢在旅程中呢如何确保安全和愉悦的体验所需的预防措施和策略。最后呢我们探讨了他将如何将这个旅途中的经历和见解融入到日常生活中和工作之中，以及呢这一场迷你退休的经历如何改变他对生活价值的看法。他分享了未来的新目标和梦想，并且呢给考虑踏上迷你退休旅程的人一些建议，包括必要的准备和心态。在访谈中呢我们还探讨了女性独自旅行是否需要担心安全问题。 Cat 有提到由于她身高175公分，所以她从来没有感到这方面的担忧，她在这个旅途中呢并没有遇到危险的经历，只是在摩洛哥旅行的时候她有过一些在路上的搭讪让她感觉到不太舒服而已。 那总的来说呢，我称 Cat 为 Mini 退休的最佳典范之一。他的故事告诉我们，我们真的不必等到退休才去追求我们自己的热爱。最后呢，如果你想要直接听这个英文版本来提升你的英文能力的话呢，那请继续收听，或者呢你可以在听完的时候再回来，就是在听这个前面说的这一些话，当然你也可以选择不听啦，哈哈。
Alright, you are listening to Fly with Lily podcast. So beside me I have Kat with me, and I met her at the co-working space where I work and meet friends. It's called Outpost in Bali. And I think Kat's story is very amazing for our mini retirement research, because she told me she just took a year off, just completely devoted into writing a book and also to explore around Asia. Kat, could you tell us more about yourself, about what you do back home, your passion, what you do when you have free time?Yeah,
of course. So I actually have a journalism background. So I studied journalism and I worked in journalism for a while, but there's no jobs in journalism. And even when there are jobs, the money's not very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was really hard. So in 2019, early 2019, I got a job in communications with an insurance company.And yeah, it was a great job for a while. And then after about 3 years, I asked for if I could take 1 year off. And they said yes. And so, yeah, I was kind of surprised they said yes. But when they did, I really had no choice. I had to take this year. And so it was a really, it's been an amazing experience. It's not done yet.
I also watch a few of your YouTube videos.
Oh, did you?
I think you have the talent in writing comedy.
Yes.
Because you just make all the videos kind of like sarcastic and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, my hobbies. Well, definitely writing is a big one. And I always liked writing. And then once I started this corporate job, I started writing fiction.Before it was always nonfiction as a journalist, and I never really seriously was into fiction, but during the pandemic I took a couple fiction writing classes. So yeah, writing is one of my big hobbies. I'm in a writing group also back home, so we meet like twice a month and we share our work and give feedback and stuff, and also it's like just nice to have friends to talk about writing with. And then my other hobby is I live in Toronto, so a lot of likegoing out to try new restaurants. There's like restaurants from all over the world. Like there's people in Toronto from everywhere, so you can try many different cuisines. I'm going out to eat, hang out with friends. Yoga. I do a lot of yoga. Bali's a great place to do that as well. I go, yeah. Yeah. I like to be, I'm not super outdoorsy, but I do sometimes like to explore like hiking and...In Canada, there's a lot of beautiful nature to see, so exploring that a little bit.
Yeah, I can vouch for that because when I see you, you're either writing or you either do yoga class or either exploring the nature.
Yeah.
It's just very inspiring. Okay, so our audience also wants to know about the plan of your trip. Can you tell us more about the detail of your trip? For example, like the length of time I just heard is a year, exactly.Or, and also the countries that you plan to visit, are there accidental countries that you visited in the past few months, or, and your budget for this trip and type of the accommodation that you chose and also transportation that you chose?
Okay. So one of the reason that I wanted to take a year off was because I always wanted to live abroad. That was like one of my dreams and I never did it. I'm 35. So a lot of peopleback home, like they'll do something like that when they're younger, like in university, do an exchange, or maybe when they just finish university, they'll do something like this. But I never did. It's expensive. It's really expensive. Even if you try and do it like on the cheap, you know, there are a lot of costs and you need to have some savings because who knows what will happen. So I don't know. I'm like, where do I start with the question? So the first thing, once I decided to do this, I wanted to stay in one place for a long time to have that experience of living somewhere else. Like, I've only ever lived in Canada. Like, what is it like to live in another country? So the first country I went to was Italy, and I was there for 8 months. And I didn't have a plan for the rest of the year. I planned to stay in Italy for 6 months. And then I was like, I'll see how it goes for 6 months. Maybe I'll stay, go somewhere. I didn't know what I was going to do.
How are you going to stay in Italy for 6 months?
In Italy, I stayed. That was the first place I went. So I was there from November 2022 until June 2023.
Okay, so the visa allows you to do that? Mm-hmm. Do you apply a physical visa?
As a Canadian, I can apply for a working holiday visa because I'm, at the time I was 34, and you can get this visa until 35, actually until like the last day that you're 35, wow. You qualify for this visa.
Amazing.
And that was kind of why I was like, it's my last chance. I gotta go. So yeah, you can get this visa. But also the thing is with this visa, you have to show that you have a certain amount of money in the bank. Like you have to, I think it's like at least like 5,000 Canadian dollars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like 3,500 euros. So you have to have some savings, right? And that's minimum. And so, yeah, so I was in Italy for 8 months, and I was an au pair. So I lived with the family. And, yeah, that was a cool experience. I got to see, you know, what it's like, what Italian, the average Italian life is like, and experience that.
Two questions that came up.
Okay.
One is like, you're exactly doing the eat, pray, love.
I know.
Itinerary, right?
I didn't go to India, though. I didn't go to India, but Italy and Bali.
Knows?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And the second question is, when you were an au pair, since it's you got a working visa, mm-hmm. are you paid to do that?
Yes and no. Because technically, it's not a job. It's considered a cultural exchange. So really the reason why I did it, it's because your accommodations are covered because that's such a huge expense. You are paid a very small amount. It's almost like a stipend kind of. So I was paid like about 100 euros a week. So it's not very
much. To cover your food.
Well, food is included as well. Okay. It's more to cover like, I don't know, just any like, if you want to go... The food is included when you eat with the family, but if you want to go, like, go to a restaurant or go, like, for drinks or buy whatever.
Gotcha.
For that, yeah. Mm-hmm. For gelato.
Nice.
Yeah.
Were you in Rome?
No. I was in a city called Turin, which is an hour outside of Milan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know that place. Yeah. I used to date a guy from there.
From Turin?
Turin, yes. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so continue. Besides Italy and Bali and mm-hmm. Indonesia, mm-hmm. I mean, like, where else?
So after Italy, so I ended up staying for 8 months, not 6 months. And then I had the summer free, like 2 months. And
you said you ended up staying in Italy for 8 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I didn't know what to do for the summer. Because I have to be back in Europe in September. It's almost September. Now it's the end of August. And so I have to be back in September to see a friend. And then my boyfriend will come and visit. So, but I had 2 months and I was like, what should I do? I didn't know if I should stay in Italy or go somewhere else. And I knew I wanted to work more. I was working on my book throughout this year, but I needed to really focus on it more, like really dedicate time to it. And so in the end, I decided to come to Asia because I had never been, first of all. And second of all, it's so far for me as a Canadian. I didn't know. Who knows when I'll ever, I most likely will never have this much time free again. And it's so far for us. So I decided to come to Asia. For the first time, Southeast Asia. And so I went to Cambodia, Vietnam, and then Bali for 1 month. And this is where Bali is where I really like focused and worked every single day my book and like set like a goal for myself to finish a first draft by the end of the month.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So Cambodia, mm-hmm. also Thailand.
I flew into Thailand, okay. but I didn't see, I only was in Bangkok.
Vietnam.
Yeah, Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Cambodia, Vietnam. For a month each?
No. A month total.
A month total.
Cambodia so that was and Vietnam was 1 month.
Whirlwind.
A bit, yeah.
Compared to you stayed, like, spent 8 months in Italy. Yes. Why is that?
Yeah, because I wanted to see what it's like to live there. Like, to actually... My mom was born in Italy.
Oh, that's why. Yeah. So it's more like like going back to your roots, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was born in Canada and I grew up in Canada, but my mom was born in Italy and like we spent a lot of time with my mom's mom, like my grandma. And so being Italian, I'm Canadian, like 100% Canadian, but there's that side of me, that Italian side, and wanting to kind of explore that a little bit. Oh, like, what if they'd never left? Like, this is what maybe my life would have been like, you know? So yeah, I wanted to stay there for a while and, like, immerse myself
exactly.
in life there.
Yeah. So my audience, they are moms or they are professional women. They have no time, but they also, like, thinking about how much money would you spend, like, a year just mm-hmm. exploring.
Mm-hmm. I had, like, $11,000 in the bank. And then the plan was to not spend any money for the first 6 months and then have the $10,000 for the other half of the year. But I ended up I had to switch families as an au pair because the first family was, I did not have a good experience with them. So I had to leave and like pay for my own accommodations for 2 months. So I ended up having to use that money. So I'm not getting paid for my job back home, but I'm still an employee. I'm just on leave. So I also got my bonus, which I think was like another $5,000. So it was like $16,000 total. And yeah, I'm going to go home with like zero money. So yeah.
You're determined like, to spend that all.
There's no choice. Like it's, yeah, it'll be all gone by the time I get back. I have savings, but it's not savings.
So the budget for the whole year trip is like 16,000.
Yeah. Canadian.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So how about like with that money, how did you choose your accommodation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, accommodations are the most expensive. Well, depending on how you travel, they can be the most expensive. I stayed in like hostels, so shared accommodations. And then in Italy, like living with a family, obviously. And then in Asia, a mix of shared accommodations because it's like quite affordable here in Southeast Asia. I can afford where I'm staying now. It's a guest house. So it was $600 for 1 month.
You have your own room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about your bath?
Yeah. I have my own. Mm-hmm. Everything's private. I have my own kitchen, bathroom, bedroom. And I wanted that because when I'm traveling, like just exploring, the accommodations aren't important to me. Like, I can stay anywhere because you're only there to sleep. And hostels usually have like fairly nice common areas too where you can hang out. But here, because I'm working on this book, I wanted something private, like something a little, so in case I do have a co-working space, but in case I'm at home and I want to do some work, I have that space to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You also just got yourself a scooter, right?
I had to get it back. I only had it for 5 days, so okay. I gave it back, yeah.
So it's just an experience.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So most of the time you walk or take
I walk or take like a grab.
Mm-hmm. Grab.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first question is, what challenges did you face before embarking on this journey and how deep they impact your decision?
Well, once I decided, okay, so like I said, I've always wanted to do this, live abroad. So in 2022, at the beginning of the year, I did a vision board. Sorry, I already know I'm going to go over 1 minute. I did a vision board and I put like going abroad on the vision board. So it's like, once it goes on, like it's happening, it's going to happen. And my boyfriend is like super supportive. My friend, everyone was super supportive. So like, I was very lucky to have that. The hardest thing was deciding where to go. Because it's overwhelming. You know, I was like, I want to go abroad. Where do I go? That was very difficult. And there's so many options. And there's so much online. There's so many resources. Do this, do that. How do you know? And like, in the end, I decided Italy. There was like an agency in Canada that helps. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pay them. And, like, they can do it for me. Like, and that was how I decided in the end. But it was really hard to decide where to go.
Yeah. It kind of gave you this peace of mind of the planning.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. So you didn't decide on getting a working visa? Did they, like, kind of suggest you?
They were like, because there's different things you can do. Like, if you only go for 3 months, you don't need a visa. But I was like, no, I want to stay longer. So then I had to get the visa. The getting the visa was really easy as a Canadian.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. So what did they help?
You pay them.
Yeah.
How much? In hindsight, I think it was like $700, which was not included in the budget that I mentioned earlier. That was extra. That was on top of that. But yeah, I would not go with them again. It's better to do it on your own. They didn't really do anything. And like I said, in the end, the family that they placed me with was not very good. So, but that's what got me there at the end of the day, right? Like, I paid the money. It's like, you're going. So at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. Like, but yeah, if I were to do it again, I would just do it on my own, figure it out.
Good. Yeah. It's good to hear that you have a vision board, because that's what I tell my students too. Like, you need to have a vision where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, it's like everywhere is okay.
Yeah.
Right. But it's nice to have a vision, and then you are like pay the money to be committed.
Yeah.
How did you realize the need for a trip to explore Asia and commit to writing a novel? What motivated you to start this adventure?
So, yeah, like I said, I felt like it was my last chance, like, in my mid-30s. So there was that, being like, it's now, really feeling like it's now or never. Also, during COVID, I've always been a traveler. And I've been very lucky to have gone to many different countries around the world. Not as many as you. Maybe one day. But during COVID... I had never done this like full year, which I always wanted to. And during COVID, especially at the beginning, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, of course, everybody hopes like, oh, it's temporary, but you never know, like, is traveling over? And I was like, oh my God, I missed my chance and it's too late. And I always knew about this working holiday visa that Canada has this program with many countries, but there's an age limit. And I was like, oh, it's too late. I missed my chance. I'm too old. Oh, my God, I'm 34. I'm, like, about to die. I'm so old. But no, like, I did the research, and it's like, okay, I have, like, one more year for certain countries. And so that was what kind of almost, yeah, that's what motivated me to go.
Nice. You made use of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I think you also talk about like why you wanted to come to Asia, because it's a far away place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So now it's towards the end of your trip, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the most significant lesson you learned during your journey? Were there any unexpected realizations?
Mm-hmm. One of the things, there's many things that I've learned, but one is I think you have to be happy where you are before you travel. So if you want to travel because you're unhappy and you think traveling will like change things and make your life so much better, you're going to be the same person no matter where you are in the world. So, you know, and that's what I realized in Italy, kind of the same like anxieties, the same like insecurities that I had, they were still there in Italy. I had the same not the exact same problems, but like the same, I don't know. I was like complaining about the same things. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. So if you can't, you have to kind of, if you want to change, you won't change by going somewhere else. You have to change from inside first, right? You still should travel. I'm not saying don't go anywhere. Like traveling can be amazing, but you just need to understand that if you're not doing the work on yourself, traveling won't make your life any better, right? So that was kind of a big realization that I had.
Very nice, because that's also what I've been talking to my students too, because they would be like, they really wanted to leave where they are because they are not happy. I say, no, stay where you are to heal first.
Yes, definitely. And like, I wasn't unhappy where I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a job, a good job, like a well-paying job, a boyfriend, an apartment, like I live in downtown Toronto. Like these are I'm from a small town. And, like, these are the dreams that I had, like, have a good job, like, make money, like, have a boyfriend, get a cool apartment. Like, it was literally everything. But dreams I was just, true. Like, yeah. And so I wasn't unhappy, but I felt, like, kind of like, oh, you know, there's this dream I had, and I still want to do it. And there were certain things that I wasn't happy about, and I realized, like, yeah, it has to come from me. It's not traveling the world. It's not going to change anything.
Amazing. So how did the challenges you encountered during your journey contribute to your growth and overcoming difficulties? Were there any particular memorable experiences, like you were like, oh, come to this realization and feel more enlightened?
Well, there was one challenge I had, which, like I mentioned, when I first arrived in Italy, I was with a family and I had a bad experience, and they were not very nice. And the whole point of this program is it's like a cultural exchange. Like, you're supposed to learn from the family, they learn from you, but it was not like that at all. Like, I was just treated like the help and not really treated like an equal. And I was supposed to stay for 6 months. And after 3 days, I was like, no, like, I'm out of here. Like, I remember like talking to my boyfriend and he's like, you didn't leave the country to be miserable there. Like, this is crazy. And he was so right. And like, I think, having already made the decision to leave my job back home or take a leave, it made it easier. When I wasn't happy, I was just like, no, like, I'm out of here. So I stayed for 6 weeks and yeah, and then I left. Mm-hmm. Because, and doing that, you know, there's no point in going all this way to be unhappy, right? Where they lived, it was outside of the city, which I knew that it would be. And I thought that would be a cool change because I live in a big city. I live in Toronto. So it's like, oh, that'll be cool to be kind of like on the countryside. But what they didn't tell me was that I wouldn't have a key and I couldn't leave. I couldn't come and go. Like, I had to ask somebody to open the door for me. They lived in a huge, it was like a villa, an estate. So I was like, I literally couldn't leave the house when I wanted to. I couldn't like go get a coffee. I couldn't go for a walk. If I left, like the alarm would go off. So like, it was just so ridiculous. It's like you leave to go on this adventure and you're literally trapped like in a home. They didn't do anything. They didn't like say anything mean to make me cry. It was just a situation. And it was like, this, no, no. Yeah. I have 1 year. Like, no, I'm not wasting my time.
Right. Yeah. I think it's also that experience kind of triggered you. Experiences you had or that your expectation is that you are going to be on a free journey, but like ended up the first thing is like trapping you.
Yeah, it was so crazy. And it was so funny because I have a journal, right? Like, I keep a journal. And when I was in Italy, it like worked out perfectly where like I finished my time in Italy and the journal was full. And so I started a new one when I started my time in Asia. And I was like, oh, let me look back. Like, what was the first thing that I wrote in my journal in Italy? Like, how was I feeling? And literally the first sentence is, I feel like I'm in jail. I left. So yeah, that was like a challenge. And the solution was just like getting out of there.
Wow. Yeah, I often also share with my friends that life doesn't give you what you want. No. They give you what you need. Maybe that's the experience that you need in order to just to like break free.
Yeah, but it teaches you like you can't. I did have a bad feeling about the family before going, but the agency, like, they pushed me to go with them. And so I trusted them. But, like, I really, first of all, should have trusted myself. And, yes, it wasn't the experience I wanted. Like, definitely learned that whatever you're expecting is going to be something else. And, yeah, learn to, like, if it's not a good situation, you can leave. Like, I wasn't in jail. Like, at the end of the day, it felt like I was. But all I had to do was say, like, I want to leave. And then that was all it took.
Yeah. So was there, like, some sort of intuition that was telling you that it's not a nice family, you need to leave. And you didn't trust that intuition, kind of regret it.
I just had a feeling they're like a very wealthy family. And I was afraid like, oh, and they had said like, we want you to work. Most au pairs, they work Monday to Friday and have weekends off. They were like, oh, well, we want you to work on weekends, but then you can have like more time off during the week. But it wasn't clear, like the expectations weren't clear. And so that was a bit of a red flag. Like, are they just going to expect me to work all the time? Which they did. But I was like, well, maybe they're not, you know, maybe they'll be flexible and it can be like a little more easygoing. But yeah, it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I had a similar experience when I was in Iceland, mm-hmm. actually, but it just wasn't expressed.
Yeah.
So both of us, we are a little bit confused. About each other's boundary.
Yeah.
So when I express it, they were kind of like feel a little bit sorry mm-hmm. and embarrassed. Mm-hmm. So that was fine, but they kind of also told me that I should have expressed earlier. And then I feel bad because I was just like, oh, well, anyways, I learned something.
Yeah.
Is to be clear
yeah.
of our expectations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good. How do you balance seeking inspiration and focusing on writing during your journey? Do you have any creative writing tips and techniques? I want to know.
It really depends on what you're working on and where you are as a writer. But for me, what I have to do is treat it like a job. So when I was in Italy, it's not a traditional job, but like you're working from, for example, like I would work from like 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. or something. And then I was free. So when I'm here, I'm treating working on this novel like a job, right? So it's like I'm working from like 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. or some or whatever hours I set for myself. If someone asks me to do something, it's like, oh, no, I'm working. Like, even though I don't have a boss, like, I'm the boss. Like, you really have to treat it like that and take it that seriously because that's the only way you'll get it done. If you're just treating it as, like, something you do on the side, that's also fine if that's what you want to do. But you probably won't. If you're trying to write a novel, like, you might not get there or it will just take a really long time. So treating it like a job is how I'm approaching it.
Yeah, I was very inspired because you have this like word count.
Yeah.
And you set the goal.
Yeah.
And I wasn't for the audience, I want to explain that I'm also coming to Bali having this idea of writing a book. Mm-hmm. But at first I wasn't doing very well until I met Kat. Her determination and also her discipline really inspired me.
I have a goal of 2,000 words a day. I don't hit it every day, just so you know.
She's also kind of flexible. That's why I like her more.
Yeah. I'm a nice boss. I'm my own boss, but like, yeah, I'm a cool boss.
And you also set up this reward system.
Yeah. So when I hit 50,000 words, I got a massage.
Yeah, I was there.
And I was like, when I finish the first draft at the end of the month, I'll get a mani-pedi. I'm not going to finish. Like, because once you start writing, especially a novel, like I know you're working on nonfiction, but a novel, it's like you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. Like you realize there's more. So I'm not. I thought the story is going to be longer than I thought it was. So I won't be completely done a first draft by the end of the month. I'm still going to, maybe I'll get a small reward. I think mm-hmm. I can still get the mani-pedi.
Yeah. Maybe but just a mani, not a pedi.
Maybe. Maybe I'll pay for the mani, but do my own pedi.
Yeah. But yeah. I have the nail polish if you want.
Okay, thanks.
It's like turquoise color. Okay. During this period, what were the moments that brought you particular joy? It took a lot of work and struggle.
Yeah.
How about the happy moment?
The happy moments, the joy, like the moments that bring me joy are the people that I meet, the people that I've met along the way. I've met some of the coolest people, and like you say, like you're inspired. I felt the same. I felt so much inspiration from these people that I've met, whether it's other travelers or locals or tour guides or like people in coffee shops that you meet and just chat with. And sometimes it's just someone you chat with for 5 minutes. And sometimes it's people you spend more time with and get to know better. Yeah, I've kept in touch. Some of the au pairs that I've met, like, I've kept in touch with, and that makes me so happy that to make new friends. A lot of people think that, like, once you're a certain age, you stop making new friends. And, like, that's only true if you allow it to be true. Like, I've met so many really cool people this year. And
that could be true if you stayed at Toronto.
Yeah. But even, like, at home, like, you can still make new friends. Like, I'm not, like, why not? I don't know. And so meeting new people has really brought me a lot of joy.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I guess we're pretty similar.
I think so.
The most interesting and most exciting part is, like, the person I met.
Yeah.
Oh, she was very smart. She was very interesting, and I admire her lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the spirit. All right. So were there any specific places or experiences that left a lasting impression?
Here in Bali, like I said, I'm staying at a guest house. And the owner is a local family. Like, it's owned by a local family, and they live there as well. They brought myself and, like, three other guests to a temple ceremony. You have to wear the traditional clothes to go. And so they, like, lent us clothes. And the owner, he's also a musician. So he, like, was playing music during the ceremony. And that's kind of why he invited us to see the music that he plays. And that was a very memorable experience, because you walk by these temples all the time in Bali. They're everywhere, right? And I always went, oh, what goes on in that temple? And so I got to go and see, and, like, everybody was so nice, and participating in that was really memorable. It was really special.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I remember that was exactly before, like, after I met you, because you were like, oh, I'm going to this ceremony to see how he performed this instrument. Lots of exciting stuff can happen during travel, but how do you find inner peace and tranquility and maintain stability amidst the challenges, the changes in environment and culture?
I don't know if I'm the right person to ask, but I just say embrace the chaos. Like, accept that there's a lot of things you can't control. Accept that, like, you don't know what's going to happen with traveling. There's, especially, like, flying, like, transportation, you don't know. You can't control it, right? Like, there could be delays. You just have to, like, accept it. You can't control all these different things. So, yeah, just give yourself a lot of time. Accept that there are things out of your control, and
So I just got a message from my friend. She heard about the earthquake this morning, and she was like, if I were you, I would just pack my bags and run now.
Apparently it's common, these earthquakes.
So I was just like, it's felt really common to me. I was growing up in Taiwan, so I just slept through with it. Yeah, so, like, everybody has different idea and can, like, treat every situation kind of differently. But I agree, when you don't know what to do, embrace it. When you don't have other place to run, just be with your feeling. What precaution and strategy did you employ to ensure a secure, enjoyable experience? Because you are a solo traveler, and a lot of my audience, they are afraid to take on this mini retirement is because they don't want to travel solo. They think it's dangerous out there.
I don't know if I have any specific strategies to share. I think having traveled previously helped prepare me, because I'm a pretty seasoned traveler. Like, I've been to Africa, Europe, I got around. So having that experience was helpful. So if you are planning on taking a year off like I did, it's probably good to have done, like, at least a little bit of travel before. You can do research, but the research sometimes makes it worse, because then you're expecting this certain thing that you read about, and it's not like that at all.
Yeah, let me change the question a little bit. What was the most dangerous situation that you ever been in?
Most dangerous? There was an earthquake last night. I don't know what the most dangerous. The place I felt the most unsafe was Morocco. I was a single woman, and you get, I don't know if harassed is the right word, but people really, like, are trying to grab your attention all the time, as opposed to like when you're with a man, they don't as much. But I never felt like scared for my life. It was just like overwhelming.
Not comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I was ever unsafe. I mean, who knows?
Whenever I'm asked this question, I always tell my friends that mm-hmm. I have common sense.
Yeah. 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 Common yeah. sense is important. And like, I think I'm tall. I'm like 175 centimeters. So I'm like, I don't think I'm like, sometimes I think that makes me less of a target being tall. But yeah, you always just like little things, like stuff you do at home, like don't leave your bag wide open. Like make sure your bag is like attached to you. Don't make yourself a target. And again, like I never felt where I've been, I've never felt afraid like for my safety. Mm-hmm. The worst that I've ever thought would happen is that my stuff would get stolen, which would be bad, but.
But it hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened.
She's not gonna do it.
But I've never felt like my personal safety is at risk. Mm-hmm. And like, this is what I tell my mom is like, when you. Because you hear in the media, like being in Canada, you hear like all these horror stories like, oh my God, like in this place, this bad thing happened and this happened, this happened. No one ever writes a news story that says like, oh, in Vietnam, like millions of people went to work and went home and nothing bad happened. But that's the vast, vast, vast majority.
Exactly.
So, but you're not going to write a news story about that. You only hear news stories about the most horrible things. Right. So we have like this perception that these places are awful. There's so much crime. And like, yes, don't get me wrong. There is crime, but like, it's not as bad as you think it is.
Right. Especially like, there are people who are afraid of taking an airplane, but actually the road traffic has more accidents than yeah. the air traffic.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really taking your life in your hands when you get behind the wheel. And we don't think about it that way. Yeah.
Exactly. After your trip, how would you integrate these experiences and insights from your journey into your everyday life and work? Are you excited to be back home soon?
Yes, I'm excited to go home. I'm still enjoying myself, but I am looking forward to going home. And I have thought about this question before. How, because there's so much of this trip that I've enjoyed, how can I take that and apply it to my life? And I think one thing that I've said is like, I want to be like a tourist in my own town. So I want to like go to meet new people, like how I, like I met you, like it's like at this co-working space. I mean, I probably won't need to join a co-working space, but maybe there's other clubs I can join where I can meet new people. And, you know, I live in a big city and there's so much to see. And like, I need on the weekends, like, I can go on, you know, pretend I'm a tourist. Like, oh, what is there to do here? And yeah, just have that sense of exploration at home. Like, mm-hmm. I don't need to be on the other side of the world to explore. Like, I can do it at home, right? Canada's huge. It's huge. So just trying to bring that mentality into my real life.
Mm, lovely.
Yeah. Mm.
I call mm-hmm. your trip a mini retirement because mm-hmm. mini retirement is you don't have to wait to retire to do things you love. Mm-hmm. And now your example. And how has the experience of this mini retirement changed your perspective and values in life? And what new goals and dreams do you have for the future?
I think I just want to do more. Like, I feel like inspired to do more work. I want to, it's not like I did this like mini retirement, like you call it, and I'm like, oh, I'm done. Like, no, it's the opposite, actually. Like, there's more, even more I want to do. Like, you know, like I've said, I'm like writing this book, but like I already have my idea for the next one, you know? And when I left my work, I'm on a leave of absence, so I'm going back. But like when I left that last day, it was such an amazing feeling. Because it's something that you don't think is possible. But I just asked, like, can I take a year off? They said yes. And I walked, I like closed my laptop, I walk out, and I'm like looking behind me, like, is someone gonna stop me? But if you just, like, anything is possible, right? Like, you just ask, of course, you know, like, I have a lot of privilege that allowed me to do this, but like, I did it. So what else can I do? Like, what other things are possible if I just ask, like, if I just go for it? So, yeah, so I feel really inspired because yeah, who knows? Mm. What else?
It's like a take back. You can always take back the right that you are a free person.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, lastly, could you share some advice for those who are considering embarking on this kind of journey or mini retirement? What preparations and mindset are essential? And then share your information for our audience and where they can contact you. Mm-hmm. And we'll say goodbye.
Okay. Mm. So I think what I would say is I know a lot of people are working their whole lives with the goal of retirement. And their mentality is like, when I retire, I'll do this, I'll do that. Well, when you retire, you're not going to magically become a different person. You're going to be the same person. So if you haven't done any of these things throughout your whole life, why would you be doing them when you retire? You need to start doing that now, right? Even if you can't do it, even if you can't do what I do, like take a year off, I get that. Like, it's difficult. But whatever things that you want to do when you retire, start doing them now. Like, you can't wait, right? It's just, it's not a good mentality to have. It'll just, I don't know, make you really sad. So I don't know what advice I can give. Like, you just have to, like I said, accept the chaos, like just go for it. Like, the only person holding you back is yourself, really. Like, we make all, you know, you think like, I can't do this, I can't do that. You can, like, there's no one, only yourself is stopping you. So yeah, just go for it.
Nice. So lovely.
Oh, yeah. How can you contact me? You can, I have Instagram, KateKatShermack, or email, KateShermack@gmail.com. I can send it to you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I'll include in our show notes.
Okay.